Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to the latest Behind the Bets podcast. Doug Kazarian taping this on Thursday, April 11th. Lot to get through with this NBA pod. We have Preston Johnson, professional bettor and sports betting analyst at ESPN, who's been, you might recognize him, and his beard on Daily Wager. So we're going to just tackle all the postseason series, get into the first round, a lot of tidbits coming up. But Dot, before we get to that, I'm a little hurt. You're not a fan of Daily Wager, are you?
Why would you say I'm not a fan of Daily Wager?
Because you called me yesterday during the show.
I called you and immediately hung up, and then I texted you because I was like, shoot, Doug's still on set right now. So
you don't even know when the show airs.
That's not true. That's why I stopped calling you.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. Here's the thing. Why did you have your phone on in the first place in the middle of a TV show?
It was actually my iWatch was buzzing.
Oh, that's
funny. So even if it's on silent, I actually use it sometimes when I, whatever, walk around and look up scores or that. But it's always on silent.
Yeah. I am a fan of Daily Wager. Great content. Okay. Incredible guests. Really good show. Yeah. Host is, you know, pretty
good.
When
does it air? When does it air?
It airs Monday through Friday.
And when you called? 6 to 7?
Yeah, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. I called you like right as it had kicked off, basically.
By the way, quick update before we get to Preston. We have progress on the pedicure. There was some tweets coming at me. I got to send some shirts out this weekend.
Love it.
So thanks to, I think I meant, did I mention it on the, yeah, I mentioned on the last pod, Carl. Right, yeah. Okay, with one. So we got more. Send them in. More pedicures. Send them our way.
You're selling the world's rarest commodity, certainty, in an uncertain world.
Courtesy of Bob Lee, we bring in Preston Johnson, professional bettor out in Las Vegas, and a somewhat regular participant here in the Behind the Bets podcast. How are you, Preston?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me back.
It's an exciting time of year. You know, I was talking to some friends and coworkers the other day and just saying how much I enjoy the regular season, the NBA, as a bettor, but obviously as a fan and bettor, there are great opportunities in the postseason, but just nothing is like the last week of the regular season. So that's why I personally get a little sad. How about you?
Yeah, I was surprised you actually messaged me that last night as well. And I mean, NBA playoffs is like my favorite time outside of maybe college football season and March Madness. Like, that third on the list there, I think, for me is NBA playoffs, especially from a betting standpoint with series prices. You have series spreads like, you know, like Bucks minus 2.5 games outside of the fact that they're laying minus, you know, 10,000 on the money line. There's so many options. There's going to be props for every one of these games within a series. I love it. So I'm fine with the regular season being over. I was ready for the playoffs like a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's just the volume, but I'm also excited. So here we are. The odds are out, and you and I had texted, just wanted to get ahead of it. You kind of challenged me to come up with money lines on all these series, and I was kind of accurate with a few, right?
Yeah, you were close.
Yeah, I guess I was most off with the Raptors. We're going to jump around a little bit, but the Sixers. I was pretty off there. I thought Philly would be about minus 300, give or take a little bit, but they're minus $8.
Yeah, that was the only one I think that anyone could kind of laugh at you about. And I think you were kind of thinking about the recent news with Joel Embiid and his knee tweak and how long is he actually going to be out and potentially missing a game or two or at least playing limited minutes. We'll find out here soon enough. But if he's off, I mean, the Sixers are a very elementary team. In fact, they were below average this year as a team. I sent you the numbers a bit ago. It was like minus 5.5 points, I think, per 100 with Embiid off the court this season, which is 27th percentile. And then when he's on, they're plus 8.9 per 100. So it's a massive swing. He's like 14.4 net rating for him, one of the best in the league. He's the most impactful Sixer. So if he's off or if he's playing limited minutes, then I definitely think, I mean, even earlier, there's another book that opened this morning that was 11-1 on the Nets to win the series, which was definitely too high. So I think when Westgate opened these more recently, it's about right, but Embiid definitely is going to be, you know, the main factor here, whether you're making a bet or not.
So, yeah, let's start there. I mean, obviously 11-1 is ridiculous. I would jump on that. But even so, Nets plus 550. And I understand that there's a little bit of Kool-Aid going on with the Nets and how let's pump the brakes a little bit. But I think there's a giant coaching mismatch here in favor of Kenny Atkinson. The Embiid stuff is legit. I mean, we just all want to conveniently think he's 100% healthy just because it fits with our timeline of the NBA postseason starting. But let's not assume that's going to be cooperating with one another. And then also just the fact what Philly did last year. Like, I know Jimmy Butler's there, and he's a big-time shot maker, and he gives them an edge. But they're not a team that really coexisted well. They've laid some eggs. And what happened last year with the Celtics, like, they were kind of embarrassing at times. So I think Brooklyn's more than a live dog here.
I think they can be. I'm kind of like with you. I think you said they're the sexy pick, and you're kind of worried about that. And maybe that's what's getting into my head, because they've become this team that is supposed to be maybe making a splash, especially against the Sixers, since they did win yesterday. They covered our best bet for us on the -5.5. Now they don't have to play the Raptors. And if they're getting an Embiid hampered or even Embiid-less Sixers team, then they're definitely live. I don't think you can disagree with that. One bet I like, I was looking at a spot that had the series spreads up +2.5 games, meaning they win two games in the series or more, is +140. So I think that's where I would look. I think the Sixers still get the win. They obviously should be a favorite for a reason. But if you think the Nets can get two games in this series, at least, then you can get plus money on that. I think that's a pretty good bet.
So I think you give them game three if they're down 0-2. So the question is, can they steal a game in Philly?
Well, you told me last night you thought that they would steal game one or two. You're not sure which one, but you think they do steal one.
Yeah, well, no, I think I said that about Orlando. I think I was like, are you ready for Orlando to win game two?
Oh, Toronto, right, and I disagreed with that, yeah.
Yeah, it was right, more like something funky's going to happen. Like, Orlando is kind of, they're a wild card in this, because when guys like Terrence Ross and Fournier and Gordon are bombing threes, like, you can't beat them, right? Well, any team's
right,
bombing
it's
threes.
It's like the Auburn effect, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's just like, what can you do? It's just silly. Now, when you look at these other series, and we're going to jump around a little bit and revisit, I think the Celtics have a very high price with no Marcus Smart. I'd realize this Pacers team's without Oladipo and Stevens and all that, but the Celtics team has issues, right? Like, we're not sure if they like each other. They've talked a big game about flipping the switch. Now, India's had problems, but I think they're healthy now. Darren Collison's back, and that was obviously a big weakness the last month or so, having Kojo start. So I think -700 +500 is kind of high. Now, that doesn't mean I think the Pacers, I'm going to play them at +$5, but that feels a little high to me without Marcus Smart.
So I was looking at my projections this morning, trying to get everything ready, and +500 is actually technically high, too, from my numbers standpoint, just looking at the number, especially with the fact Smart could be out for an extended period of time. So for me, +500 would be worth a smaller play. Maybe, again, I kind of try to maybe limit some of the variance some, and you can take the Pacers +2.5 games or go that route, similar to the Nets Sixers. But Indiana's absolutely deserving to be here. The fact that they stayed in that 4-5 race most of the season without Oladipo, now they kind of struggled down the stretch. They had a pretty brutal road stretch or road trip down the back end of the season that I don't think really helped them at all. They had a similar setup the year prior. Remember, they took the Cavs, who ended up going to the finals, the 7 games last year, I believe, in that opening round.
Yes.
And that was with Oladipo, obviously. So there's a drop-off, but this is the Boston Celtics. It's not LeBron James. I'm very intrigued, and I think at +500, this would probably be closer. I think I was like +390-something, 396, just looked it up. So, I mean, you're definitely getting a pretty sizable edge here, actually, on the Pacers. I'll probably be looking to take them either spots in certain games, or I'm actually just betting them. Like +7 here is the opener in game one that just kind of opened about 20 minutes ago. That's probably a little bit high, to be honest. So they definitely are being undervalued, I think, right now in the market.
So a couple things that you said. I think the last month or so they struggled. I really think that was injuries. So Oladipo out, like, you're even thinner. And when you're missing guys like Wes Matthews and Collison, like, that's significant. They can't overcome that. Like, they just cannot when they're missing Oladipo. So I'm going to take them at full strength, minus Oladipo, and the Celtics. And I just there's a lot of things I just don't trust about Boston. Now, if they flip the switch and make the run, it's like, oh, here we go again. They're loaded on paper, and it's finally translating on the court. But that I'm with you on the series. You know, first of all, game-to-game betting, obviously, there's going to be better opportunities. And then the props as well. I like the +2.5s of some of these matchups. Let's go back and start with the Warriors here. The highest the odds at Westgate go up, -50,000. So 1 to 500 odds, the Warriors are favored. And then the comeback on the Clippers to win the series is 100-1 just to win the series. I mean, what is your model? Just for curiosity, what does your model say?
It's 100 to 1 adds value, actually. I mean, technically, like anything can happen. Maybe Steph, you know, hurts his, was it a groin that he kind of tweaked the other night? I mean, I don't know. To be completely honest, it should probably be something in the 50 to 1 range. So technically, there's a bunch of value, but do you really want to bet on a team that's very unlikely to actually win the series? Probably not. You know, if you do it, I think you can also get 250 to 1 there for them to win the West. So if they, you know, if they beat the Warriors, then you're getting, you know, great value at that point into a second series. I do think they're going to get a game. I would be surprised if Golden State swept. I think just the way this is not model based, this is not numbers based, but I'm a basketball fan. I've watched a lot of NBA, and the way they've just played all year, where they grind, they are so deep. They don't even start their best players. They bring in Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell off the bench, and they just attack those bench units and have a huge edge against most other teams' benches. And Golden State would be one of those where they are, you know, not as deep as other teams are. So I think the Clippers are going to find a way to get a game at some point. More than likely, it'll be at home when they're maybe, you know, only a 5 or 6 point dog, rather than, I think it opened 11. It's already up to 12.5 here in game one. So Golden State's taking some early money.
I disagree a little bit. There's no chance they win at Oracle. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I really think the Clippers, it's a horrible matchup for the Clippers. And, I mean, obviously the Warriors are for most teams. But the Clippers have been a great story in the regular season. But that's, think about it, there's 29 other teams. And aside from that loss to the Lakers this week, although the Lakers aren't really that bad, I guess, now. They won all the games they needed to win. They should have won, right? They beat the Memphises at home. They beat the Bulls at home. They won a couple, you know, coin flip games, maybe as a slight dog. They never blew a game where they were like 7 point favorites. They never lost those. Like they took care of business. So they accumulated a lot of nice wins and a nice record, but they're not a team that's built to hang with the Warriors. They don't have the shooting outside of Gallo and Lou Williams. And then maybe my guy Shamet, but like Zubac is going to get eaten alive.
He crushed Boogie the other night.
Okay, in a game they lost by 30. But yep.
Zubac is the man.
That may be true. I just think it's a really bad situation for the Warriors. For the
you will be able to bet then, getting to this -3.5 if you want. That'll be out there. You'll have the option. We don't have a price on that yet that I have seen, but that will come up. And if you think it's a sweep, you can absolutely just take that. I think it'll be.
I say they have no chance at Oracle. I can obviously, you know, with you, I'm sorry to interrupt. I obviously can understand how the Warriors can lay an egg in the Clippers, because the Clippers, the reason they took care of business is they're a professional team. They're polished. They're reliable. So I can see them having top level effort at home both games, and there's a chance they can sneak one of those games.
Yeah, I think they will. But, I mean, Golden State's moving on. It's not worth taking 100-1 ultimately long-term, unless you're just really grinding and you're like, oh, a 2% edge here, I'm going to take a shot or whatever. So, for me, I'm passing on the series. But 100-1 is a little bit high. You never know. Weird things have happened.
Okay, so since the playoff format formed, and I'm going to do the math, I guess 35 years ago, right, to expand it to 16 teams. So not the.
I'm not even that old. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Right. So I think so, because I'm going to give you the stats. The one seeds in the first round in the 16 team format are 65-5, and the two seeds are also 65-5. So that's 70, right? So that's 35 years, right? Because that's combined East and West. So I just don't, like you say, stranger things happen. I think it's like, remember that year that Ginobili had an injury? I think it was an elbow injury in the 1-8 matchup, and Memphis beat the Spurs. Those are the situations.
That.
Like, that's what happens, not these kind of situations. Now, it could. We've seen crazy stuff happen in other sports, but not like this. So the times it's happened, and let's go to that series price. So Denver is a 2 seed and only -200 to the Spurs.
Yeah, I know. I think you were hoping it would be even lower. Everyone I've talked to now for the last few weeks, and I think I mentioned this on the show once, but I've had multiple people tell me the Nuggets stink. And I've probably convinced myself watching them for the last couple of weeks that they stink too. But just from a sheer price and value standpoint, everyone's loving the Spurs as an upset pick here in this 2-7 matchup. Even last night, Denver was down 11 with 3 minutes left against the T-Wolves and a chance to lock up the 2 seed in home court in the second round. I mean, they just could not play well. They were going up against, who was it, Cameron Reynolds and C.J. Williams were just lighting them up. It was embarrassing. And they've had a couple effort games like that for the last couple of weeks now. But this price, I'm guessing, is going to actually go down. So if you do like the Spurs, I would bet it earlier rather than later. But I'm going to absolutely be on Denver under minus 200 when this series. It should be closer to, I think I had 76%, which is more like a minus 300 line. I think it's a pretty big edge, actually. So I'm not rushing to bet it. Again, I think the Spurs are going to take some money. But anything under 200 or even at minus 200 is still a worthwhile bet.
So here's my thing with the Nuggets. And I've said this, I believe, on this podcast before. And I want to not challenge you in your model, but I want you to process it. So I think the way the regular season is laid out inflates Denver's numbers, especially at home. Like their home record, what was it now, 38-6 or whatever it is? You know, obviously it has to add up to 41, so do the math. But like, it's kind of a joke because they catch a lot of teams on back-to-backs, including the T-Wolves last night. They, all these East Coast teams doing like 6-game West Coast road trips, and they're just, it's just inflated and skewed. And then you get to the postseason and you don't have that competitive advantage because you're playing better team, and B, they're already adjusted and relocated and there's no back-to-backs. The last time the Nuggets were in the playoffs, they got upset at home to that Warriors team, that not the year they won at all, but the year before that with Mark Jackson. So I don't trust this Nuggets team based on the eye test the last month or so, and also based on they're not who they are on paper.
So I would say three things. One, I'll say to some extent you're right. They have a benefit of a schedule situation where they play in altitude. They get teams on back-to-back occasionally. Now every other team also gets teams on back-to-back, so that's not the unfair part. So really it's not the same exact thing unless you're just relating to the altitude, because right, they do have altitude. The Jazz have altitude, but like everyone gets teams on back-to-back, so that's a wash. So how much do you put into altitude in a back-to-back is really the difference. Maybe
like, or the altitude on all the road trips. That's what I'm saying. Just the altitude in general, like teams are more adjusted. Even going back to the Melo teams, like they weren't as good in the playoffs at home that they were in the regular season. It's just sort of the nature of, it's just a skewed number when it comes to Denver and Utah.
I just don't think it's that skewed. If you actually went back and did, you know, altitude's maybe worth like a point, maybe it's a little bit above a point on a back-to-back only, to a point spread. And so if you went through all their home games where they got teams on a back-to-back and altitude and, you know, adjusted like 1 point for however many times that happened, I don't even think it'd be worth two games. It's probably between one and two wins. So yeah, maybe that drops them down to like the four seed in this case. But it doesn't really change like how good they are. If we went through the roster, this is what I would ask you. One, like, how is San Antonio going to actually beat them? Are they going to long to them to death? Is the bench where Denver is really, really deep, and actually the Spurs have had an edge against other teams because the bench does spread it open a little more with Bertans and Patty Mills, who can shoot and run the offense. Well, against Denver, it's going to be tougher because Denver's nine deep themselves. And so if you went through and said, like, who's the best player in this series, who would you choose?
So it's good. Those are great questions. So my answer to the first part is I think they beat them by taking more efficient possessions on offense. Like, I think they don't waste possessions. I think Denver chucks like they think they're the Warriors, and they get sloppy way too much, and they're very casual on offense. I think Jokic, as much as I love him and I find him an enjoyable watch, I think there's times where I'm kind of sick of his act, and I think he needs to be more aggressive on offense and shoot more, and he doesn't. And then you get these guys, like, I love Murray and Harris shooting, but I think some of these Barton step backs, some of this other stuff, Millsaps, I think, lost a step a little bit. There's just something off with this Nuggets team, and you see it in why they're so bad on the road. And they've been kind of bullies at home for what we just touched on. I just don't think very good teams are that good on the road. Now, the Spurs, also not world beaters on the road. They're nine games under. In Denver's about 500. On the road, but I think they get sloppy in offense, and I just think the Spurs are better shooters and take more efficient shots.
Well, the Spurs, I mean,
polished on offense is probably the word I was looking for.
I'm pretty sure they lead the league in like long twos, which would be the most inefficient shot. And that's because they have LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. So outside of those two, they take very efficient shots. It's a lot of three pointers and a lot of shots in the paint, but they have two of the guys that shoot the most long twos in the entire NBA. So in that sense, it hurts their efficiency. I would say over as an aggregate, my guess is that Denver actually takes more efficient shots. But if you just went through player by player, I mean, I would take Jokic before anybody in that series. He's the best player. And then, I mean, how much do you really like Aldridge or DeRozan more than some of these other guys that Denver can put out. I just think, you know, outside of the coaching mismatch, because I think Popovich, and Mike Malone's a great coach, actually.
Yeah.
Probably top three as far as, you know, coach of the year. Popovich still has an edge over basically everybody. So there is something there, maybe outside of Brad Stevens. That's about it. So they probably have, you know, I think a better chance Denver does playing at home in these first two, going out to a lead before Popovich maybe makes more adjustments. And maybe the Spurs can make a push later. But for me, yeah, I think it's Denver's a better team. I just don't know why people hate them outside of they haven't looked very good recently. And I even made fun of them last night and tweeted about like the everything is fine gif. Like they're good. They're really good. And they played poorly in these last 10. I think they went 6-4 or 5-5. But they were the one seed / two seed in the West the entire season. And that's still worth something. They're player by player, they're a better team. The only edge, I think, for the Spurs is Popovich. And ultimately, is he really going to swing a series when they're on the road? I think you said you like Denver in seven anyway, but you think it'll be a lot closer ultimately.
Yeah, I said the home team's probably going to win every single game in this series. As soon as I said it, efficient's the wrong word to use when talking about NBA because it has a stat that's actually efficient. I meant more just polish and I think like experience maybe. Like I just trust this crew and Pop more than I trust Denver. And maybe it's not fair to Denver because we've seen them in high-profile games get waxed because that's the Warriors they faced. And, like, yeah, the Warriors also spanked the Spurs, but we didn't talk about that. Like, I do think Denver's better than the narrative, current narrative. I do think they're a good team. But I'm just making the case for the Spurs there. Like, that was my – and I just – I trust Patty Mills and Bryn Forbes and Bertans shooting threes than I do – the other guys on Denver.
You might have a better shot if DeMar DeRozan, who has a very bad track record in the NBA playoffs, by the way, if he gets hurt maybe in the first game or second game, and then Bryn Forbes and Patty Mills and Bertans get to shoot more. But until then, I think DeRozan's getting his 20 shots.
Yeah, I'm not a huge DeRozan guy.
I think that hurts him, honestly. So, I mean, there was that stat, and we're going to get to it with the Raptors series. Maybe it's a good segue. I saw yesterday of 396 players that have logged 1,500 minutes or more in the postseason, the top guys in win shares per 48 minutes is number one, Michael Jordan, number two, LeBron James, number three is Kawhi Leonard, and then number 391 of 396 is DeMar DeRozan. So it speaks to the upgrade for the Raptors here, which we can get to, but DeMar DeRozan just isn't very good. He's not a good basketball player. He's way overpaid.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan and all that stuff, but the Spurs, look, they exceeded expectations, so maybe they should be a five-game gentleman sweep and be done. But I'm fascinated because that, going back to what I was saying, is a two seed. Only five times is a two seed lost in the first round, and now we have a minus $2 as a two seed with no like key
injuries.
It's cheap.
I think it's crazy.
Yeah, no, with no key injuries or anything like that.
Yeah. And real quick, I want to preface, or I should not say preface, but end this by saying people that listen to our pod before the season, they maybe recall – I'm not anti San Antonio. You're like, man, you're really, you know, hammering into them. I was the only person I know that bet Spurs season wins over. Everyone loved the under this year. I was the only person I know that bet over. So I am still pro San Antonio. I just think people are totally overreacting to Denver.
Fair, fair. Let's go to that Toronto series, as you mentioned, because they're the two seed out east. Look, it's just a different feel right now in the entire Eastern Conference with no LeBron. What was it, 9 straight years to the finals? Finally, mm-hmm. Toronto doesn't have to deal with LeBron, but they got to deal with Giannis. So the Bucks will get to. But Toronto obviously went through a makeover in the offseason. New coach, new superstar. DeRozan's out, so they have a new superstar in Kawhi. And you love them. You love this Toronto team. Explain why.
Okay. I mean, we could go on and on. I sent you I think it was a soliloquy last night in a form of a text. But ultimately, we talked about the upgrade from DeRozan to Kawhi Leonard. I think we would all be foolish not to admit that Kawhi Leonard has another level, and especially in the playoffs, and especially this season where he's played, you know, two out of every three games, more or less, he's been resting, and he can take him to another level. But get this, since they traded for Marc Gasol, which is when I drove down to the Strip here in Las Vegas and bet them at plus 275 to win the East, and I still think you can get plus 225 to 250 out there, which I think is a fantastic bet. I'm going to write about it. It'll be on ESPN.com later tomorrow, probably tomorrow morning. But Marc Gasol, on the floor this season with the Raptors, they are plus 17.3 points per 100. That's a 99th percentile lineup league-wide, any Marc Gasol lineup. The best five since the trade that has logged a minimum of, I think it's 500 minutes, is the Gasol, Siakam, who's going to be the most improved player in the NBA, Leonard, Danny Green, who's a top 10 net rating guy. I think he's actually maybe top five. He's in that 4, 5, 6 range. The entire NBA this season, Kyle Lowry. Those five have been the best lineup in the entire NBA since they traded for Marc Gasol. So having all those guys, and I think everyone says, well, Kyle Lowry, like, he's awful in the playoffs. You just mentioned it about DeMar DeRozan. It's true, but now he gets to play basically fourth fiddle, way more comfortable. He's not playing a LeBron team, which is really the only team they couldn't beat, and guy they couldn't beat was LeBron James. I think he's going to be awesome just hanging out, distributing, and hitting open threes. And then a big, big thing for me as far as long-term against the Eastern Conference, ultimately the championship game most likely will be Milwaukee. Brogdon's out for the Bucks, so we can get into the Bucks more. He's a 16 points per game guy, 50, 40, 90 guy, really good defender. And we'll see, you know, how healthy he is as the playoffs progress. But Toronto's completely undervaluing the deepest team. You can have guys like Danny Green's hit so many big shots, not even in the playoffs, NBA Finals. Ibaka's hit some big shots for OKC back in the day. And he's coming off the bench with Van Vliet, who's a really good metrics guy. I love him. I was shocked. So earlier this morning, there was one book that had Toronto minus 5,000. And then Westgate opened a minus 1,400. And technically, there is an edge at minus 1,400. I'm not, you know, jumping to lay minus 1,400, tie it up. I'll probably just pick spots within the series, or I'll lay minus 2.5. I think the Magic can get one game, but minus 2.5 was pretty cheap. I actually sent it to you earlier. I'm trying to remember what it was at. I think it was minus 230. I love that. Raptors minus 2.5, minus 230. I think that's really low. So
when you say minus 2.5, minus 230, basically the Magic cannot get two games.
Correct. The Magic can lose 4-1 and you cover Raptors by three games, covers a minus 2.5. And you know, the Raptors are maybe sweeping a good portion of the time too. So as long as this doesn't go to 6 or 7 games, you're going to be cashing that bet.
Right. And okay, so my thing with Toronto, and maybe why the odds are so low, or at least relative to what they should be, is that they've had so many guys resting all season, and then they've also had legitimate injuries, whether it be Kawhi, other guys, Van Vliet even missed some time. Like, it's been just like this. I just don't know what they are, right? There's been times where I love them and they're so lethal. They can go on these like 11-0 runs, which like they did against Miami couple, you know, last Sunday. But I think I just kind of have to see it before I know what I'm talking about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I just think, because especially when we're talking about youth and the reason that you would maybe dislike Denver some, they're not as experienced. I mean, we just mentioned all these guys that have done it in the playoffs, the NBA Finals. Like Kawhi Leonard is – here's another thing. As far as long-term, if there's one player that's defended LeBron better than anybody in the history of the world, is Kawhi Leonard. And he gets to go up against Giannis. They can throw Siakam at Giannis. Marc Gasol is a great rim protector, rebounder in the back. I just think long-term – as far as the East picture goes against Giannis, Kawhi Leonard is just, I think he's completely underrated because he hardly played last year. And then this year he plays 2 out of every 3 games and they're kind of taking it easy. I think they know they're going to make a run here in the playoffs and they just haven't, like you said, and it's fair. You're not really sure what they are yet, but when you don't know what they are yet, is still second best in the East, you know, 58 wins, some of the best net ratings in the NBA for some of these guys. Like that's kind of scary in my opinion. I think we're undervaluing then their experience. If you're going to use that, you know, for, say, the Denver-San Antonio series, Kawhi's got just about as much experience as anybody. Marc Gasol's up there. He's beaten the Spurs as an 8 seed before. You just mentioned that series back when he was there with Rudy Gay and Mike Conley. And then Ibaka, Danny Green. Lowry's experience is negative, but he is there. He's gotten the experience. Yeah, I just love him. I just think they're totally going to be playing at another level here come playoff time. And, you know, you even asked me last night, well, what's the price in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Bucks? Now, the Bucks will be a favorite, because they've been a better team all year slightly, and then they will be at home because they have the better record. I think Toronto on the road in a 7-game series in Milwaukee, assuming Milwaukee doesn't have Brogdon, should be the favorite, and they won't be. So that's just how much higher I think I am on Toronto. You can get plus 250 right now on them to win the East. So unless you really think they're going to lose to the Magic or lose to a Sixers team with the Embiid issues now with his knee, they're already, you know, not deep enough. They're just going to sag off, let Ben Simmons shoot jumpers at him. They don't have enough. The Sixers don't have enough. We can get to that series now, but I love it. Raptors, I think, are the most. I think it's one of those. It's gonna be the team, the Eastern future, whether it be series stuff. Everyone will be like, "Wow, how did we like not see that? How do we miss this entering the playoffs?" Because for some reason, no one's really talking about them.
So you touched on a couple interesting things. I would hammer the Raptors against the Sixers in a series price. Like that really interests me because of just, you know, I talked about it earlier. I'm just not a huge believer in Philly. But going back to the Bucks, so that's the question. My understanding is that Brogdon would be back by the finals, conference finals.
Everyone said he might be, but he's really okay. No one has a timetable for him. And the injury, from what I've heard, usually takes longer. So if he's back, he's not even 100%. I wouldn't bank on him. And I think he's more valuable to that team than people realize when it's, you know, Sterling Brown getting some of the minutes or Pat Connaughton or Tony Snell. Like, that's a pretty big drop.
Oh, my gosh. And then it's compounded when, like, Mirotić is out. I mean, they're different positions and different.
Sure, although I think he's fine. I think they were playing it safe with him. He was just,
I love Mirotić for this team.
Yeah.
So I love Mirotić for them, but Bledsoe really is the key to the Bucks. I mean, if he can be a second real legit player alongside Giannis, I mean, I think to me, like, that's huge. And then for Toronto, like, I just, Ibaka drives me crazy. Now he's off the bench, thank God. Whereas last year he was a liability. The guy thinks he's a 3-point shooter. It's just really annoying. He doesn't kind of like do his job, stay his lane. When he does, he's great, or at least, you know, effective. But
you made a good point last night, actually. You said, you know, the Bucks are going to spread the floor. They have Brook Lopez who's just banging 30-footers like it's nothing. And Giannis is just going to get to the paint, and they have all these shooters. In my opinion, now I'm not coaching, I'm not game planning, but you have Kawhi Leonard, you have Siakam, you have Marcus Gasol. My guess is that they dare Giannis to drop 50 or 60 every night and beat on Kawhi Leonard or Siakam in the off minutes that Leonard's maybe resting on the bench. And say, no one else is going to beat us. You're not going to hit a bunch of threes. Giannis, you're going to have to hit step-back threes or drive to the basket and beat Kawhi and Siakam. That's my guess is what they do. And I just don't know, as great as Giannis has been, and he'd be my vote for Defensive Player of the Year and MVP this year, is that really enough to beat the Raptors, like, single-handedly? If he does, then all power to him. He is the best player for the next 10 years in the NBA. But I just don't know if he can.
Well, so, like, that's their offense, right? Giannis driving to the paint. That's why he gets all those dunks, because he's got that wingspan strength, and opposing centers having to guard Splash Mountain out on the perimeter, along with Bledsoe, along with Connaughton, along with Tony Snell, along with Mirotić, along with everyone, just bombing threes. So it's just four guys shooting threes, and then he's Shaq with the dribble, right? Like, that's essentially what they do, and he's unguardable because you can't put a guard on him, you can't put a center on him. He just dunks over dudes, and he's so strong. So, but you're right. Like, at some point, just make him drop 60 to beat you and don't let anyone else score. Like, maybe that is the most effective defense. I like it. And then when you're sending, you know, really talented defenders at him too, you're not just conceding points. So yeah, maybe that is the best way, because at some point he's going to get tired. He's going to take baby hooks, like that game against the Sixers a couple Thursdays ago, or maybe even just last week when he dropped 45 and 15 and whatever he did. Like,
yeah,
he did miss some bunnies in the paint because he pulled up a little short and the Sixers defended him somewhat effectively. So the Bucks may be a year away. Like, they're maybe a year away, particularly because of the injury bug.
Sure. And, I mean, it can be said, too, with Budenholzer, very similar stuff to that Hawks year where he goes to Atlanta. They win 60-something games. And, I mean, even in 2 years against LeBron, I think they were 0-8. They got swept twice. One of those LeBron teams, they didn't have Love or Kyrie. I mean, it can be a really good regular season team, very systematic. But you have a defense that is game planning correctly and with players that can do it correctly, like Kawhi Leonard, who I think is one of the best players in the world, it's going to be a lot tougher. And I agree. I think they are the peak during the regular season team that's still a year away from even winning the East. They'll have a better shot next year, assuming they can bring Chris Middleton back. So there's some logistics there. But, yeah, as far as the Pistons go, and we can just segue into that, there's no line here for game one. But they deserve to be a massive favorite. Blake Griffin's hobbled, hampered. He's probably going to be playing, you know, at 50% or something with his knee. He didn't even play in a must win. They had to win the other night against the Knicks. They'd rather rest him, see if he can get something before Sunday's game. But there's no line for that for obvious reasons. But in the regular season with a healthy Blake Griffin, Milwaukee's net rating against the Pistons was plus 17.9. They basically beat them. If you break that down, it's per 100 possessions. So by the over a game, it's probably beating them by like 15 points a game. They have too much. I would be shocked if the Pistons got more than a game. And I sent to you, I know you have to lay some juice, but I'd be shocked actually if the Milwaukee just didn't sweep them. And you'll be able to lay sweep if you want. But I saw it was Bucks -2.5, -800. That's probably low. The Bucks are definitely winning this series. I'm not anti-Milwaukee.
I agree. I mean, it's 100-1. Just remember earlier in the podcast, we talked about the Warriors being 500-1 favorites. So 1-100 there. And like, Detroit can get hot from three. They have enough guys who just bomb. You know, they have like three or four guys who could get hot and really make things uncomfortable. But I think the Bucks, I think there'll be a time where they get tight in the postseason, but I don't think it's the first round. I think they're coming in like super confident and will just destroy him, especially if Blake Griffin's limited. I mean, there's only so much Drummond can do, and Reggie Jackson's does more harm than good. So I would lay the
in the end, you kind of want Reggie Jackson trying to get hot.
Like, oh, yeah. Okay.
If he's trying to get hot, so be it if he does, but that's generally good defense.
So question for you, and this is like a half joke, but it's like kind of sadly serious. There are parts of me, when I see all these games and I see all these first half, like are the Pistons going to cover every half against the Bucks? Like, you know where I'm going with this.
You just want to lay Bucks first half, and if they lose, second half. And if they lose that,
game two,
the
first
Bucks
half.
First half again or first quarter.
Yeah. I mean, like, just go Martingale on this. Like, I just think, look, the way the NBA is, and you know one of the reasons I love the NBA's handicapping effort, that's why I liked the final week of the regular season so much, because there is a method to the madness. Like, I'm really excited to bet some game two dogs that just got killed in game one, right? That's the most fun, right? Maybe even first quarter, first half. So like, it's just, it's handicapping effort, because that's a lot of times what makes the difference in these point spread outcomes. And it's really hard to do in most sports. And I think in NBA, you can kind of get a feel for this stuff throughout the course of the regular season. So when it comes down to this, when you have a team that's mismatched over Detroit and these lines for like a quarter line or half are like two possessions, essentially, it's six, you know, maybe that's stretching the two possession limit. But I just feel like you can't sustain it if you're one of the underdogs, especially when you go to the road city and just try to get one game.
It's the comparable example here is, I mean, you're right. It's very unlikely Detroit's going to cover a first half, a second half, and do it in four straight halves against Milwaukee on the road, especially if Blake Griffin has issues, this and that. Like, then, you know, at the same time, if you lost all four and you're martingaling, people don't know what that is. It's like chasing your bed, which I do not condone. But if you're doing it to try to get plus, yeah, it's more often than not the Bucks will win one of those halves. And if you needed to take it into Detroit in game three, you hypothetically could. But the comparison is, I mean, I've walked by roulette tables here in Vegas, and I've seen 18 or 19 straight reds.
So have I.
And every time I do that, and I'm with you to some extent where – even me, and I am all numbers, and people probably get mad at me or make fun of me for even admitting this, but anytime I walk by and it's like 10 or more straight of one color, I just take out 100 real quick and bet it on the other color, because I would feel so – I would hate it if it went black on the other side when I was walking by, and I was like – it feels like it's more likely to happen. Like, it's due, right? Law of averages. But really, it isn't.
It's not.
But when you're walking by and you see 18 reds, or you're watching the Bucks play the Pistons – and they've played so horribly, and somehow Reggie Jackson 6-for-9 from three in the first half. How are the Bucks not going to win the second half? And how could the Pistons do it again 2 days later if they did upset Milwaukee? I get that. It is possible. I've seen reds. It's either 18 or 19 straight. It could happen. So I don't condone it.
It's funny. I'm on the complete opposite. Like, I do make fun of people who do that with the red, because like those are like built in there. It's completely independent of one another. Going back to the other,
I feel
like
half of basketball.
No, see, I disagree, because I think it's cause and effect. I think what it would take for Detroit to cover a first half and then even both halves, like, there's an energy that just, like, remember I was texting you during the Clippers Warriors game on Sunday night, and the Clippers were doing everything they could to stay within the game in the first quarter and change. I go, they cannot keep this up, and they just don't have it in them. They're not talented enough, and they're doing everything they can possibly. Whereas you don't get that on like a roulette wheel. My point is, the Bucks are just so much better, and they're vastly, like, they're going to blow Detroit out in one of these games, maybe not, maybe both. So they're just so much better. So if Detroit does all of it, it's not just like the unlikelihood of the math. It's more
Doug,
it takes.
Doug, all of that is built into the line.
I agree. I know what you're saying.
You're still basically betting a coin flip. So all that stuff is built in. If the Bucks are down at halftime against Detroit as a 10 or 11 point favorite, whatever it'll be in game one, that's going to be an inflated line second half, because it takes into account all of that stuff, plus the numbers, plus the regression that Reggie Jackson won't go 6-9 from three.
Correct.
You're still essentially flipping a coin, and it's possible to lose 4, 6, 8 straight coin flips ultimately.
See, I don't think it's as exact as a coin flip. It's not as clean as that.
Well, it's not, because that's why we're betting edges. I mean, I'll bet it if it's a point off in the second half. So, yeah, in theory, you might have 55, 56% here and there. But, I mean, as a whole, you could lose, you know, eight straight 55% events. Like, it's possible. So I wouldn't tell people to do that, but you seem to pick spots like that where you double down second half and they do bounce back and you don't really lose.
Well, I think, like, I think a better example, because it's tested over time, is like the Warriors, right? Because their apex is like, you can't build that in the line. Like, they can just, they're an outlier to the point. Like, it's just, it's really annoying, right? Like, they're hard.
They were especially early on when they broke out.
Right.
Yeah, they definitely were.
Like, they're, what is it, nuclear clay? Like, their version of nuclear is just like, you can't, you're not going to make a second half line like 19, right? Like, you just can't do that. And then teams, especially in the playoffs, will punt, right? Like, they'll punt on the second half in the fourth quarter when they got another game to worry about, if it's like 15, whereas that may not happen as much in the regular season, things like that. So I do
it's
think
possible. Not if Detroit was winning, they wouldn't.
Well,
be
no, of course not. Right, but, right.
Yeah, if they went down 15 at some point with 4 or 5 minutes left, then yeah, it's possible.
Right. So these are just kind of things in the back of my mind that make me kind of smile, and I haven't quite formally decided that's my approach, but it's something like, well, for example, actually. Hold that thought. We'll finish it, then we'll break. But we talk about the edge, like, in terms of things that are built in the line. Like, you and I both loved the Nets yesterday. And it was like, well, they did the D-Wade final home game on the road. They got nothing to play for. Miami's been eliminated from the playoffs. Like, the narrative, but you're, you know, to play devil's advocate, I would say, oh, well, that's built into the line. That's why the Nets are 5.5 and not, like, 3. But, you know, sometimes there's just no handicapping for such a wonky situation.
Yeah, and I would say that scenario is a lot more unique and different situationally than the Bucks just didn't play a good half.
Correct.
And the Pistons played a great half. So that was a much more unique situation, I think, with the Nets versus the Dwayne Wade send-off home finale night before in Miami, traveling to Brooklyn. And, you know, ultimately, yeah, I think that's a little bit different, which is why, and I even said on the show, I said, I'm normally a numbers guy, but I think the Nets win this game. Like, they cover, it should be a blowout. And it basically was.
Right.
So I think that's way more unique than like half to half in a playoff series.
Well said. And to that point, the final couple of days of the regular season, a lot of shops have very low limits. Some don't even put up lines till the very end.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's definitely treated differently than the playoffs. All right. Much more with Preston Johnson coming up after these messages.
Pay that man his money.
Back here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Preston Johnson here. All right, man, so we've kicked the tires on a lot of theories and then some of these matchups. One thing we got to get to is a 6-3 matchup in the West, and that's the 6-seed Oklahoma City Thunder favored minus $1.50 over Portland. And, wow, quite the up and down for this Thunder team. First half of the season, everyone loved them. They were one of the best teams against the spread. This is the only threat out west of the Warriors, and then the second half happened. They were one of the worst teams against the point spread. Paul George injures his shoulder, and then they get the comeback win, I think down 15 in the fourth to Houston the other night, and all of a sudden, they're like a bet-on team now, and now they're favored against Portland?
It's okay to admit, whether you're doing this for a living, whether you're doing it recreationally, that you don't like a play or have no idea about something, and then pass. You know, we're trying, and we are gambling, right? We are betting on these things, but you're trying to do it with an edge that you think isn't a gamble. In this case, I think it would be a gamble. So I'm staying away, and you brought up great points. I mean, the Nurkic injury for Portland, I felt so bad because, you know, I was tweeting how great he was like 10 minutes before it happened. And so I feel like I jinxed him and I'm somewhat responsible, but he's such a big drop off. I think he was 7th in net rating in the NBA this year. People don't realize how valuable he was to Portland, how great he's been. The drop off from him to Enes Kanter or Zach Collins, who just really hasn't broken out to being a serviceable guy, it's massive. Oklahoma City, Steven Adams, and then the guys like Russ and Paul George driving to the basket. They're going to eat up Enes Kanter and pick and roll. The matchup says Oklahoma City. You brought up points about just Dame Lillard maybe being, you could argue, the best player on the court at any time in any series, especially at any, you know, any of these games, he could just go off. CJ McCollum had, I think it was a knee thing, but he's been back and okay. They just beat up too much, but they do have home court. Now, they got swept by the Pelicans last year.
They did.
So they have that in the back of their minds. They're definitely deeper this year. They have better pieces of Seth Curry, Rodney Hood, as opposed to having to play Evan Turner and Harkless more minutes. And, you know, it got a little bit tough for him last season, even without injuries. So my opinion is that Oklahoma City, I think I told you in my head, which is what kind of came to, hey, what would you guess each series line at? And you were pretty close outside of that Sixers one on most of them. But my guess was OKC minus 120. Now it's minus 150. I know earlier in the morning, there was a shop that opened them. I think it was minus 118. And then it got bet up pretty high from there. So people love Oklahoma City. I think they just trust Paul George and Russell Westbrook. I bet that everyone loved them last year, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, trust the team that lost first round last year?
I don't know. Yeah, I was on the Jazz, and they were suffering some injury stuff, meaning Utah was, and they took care of them pretty easily anyways. I'm not sure what there is to like about a team that was, I think it was it like 6-13 down the stretch until the last maybe three, maybe they went 2-1 in the last three. So, they, I mean, they struggled. They couldn't win games. Their net rating was 29th, I think, in the NBA over that stretch. I mean, they were playing like a bottom-tier team. They just had already locked up the playoffs. So that's why I say here, I just tried to, you know, say why I would believe in them, and now I'm saying why I don't. And I could see this going either way. I could see Lillard in a much deeper Portland Trailblazers who are going to be home four times out of seven potentially getting this done. So I'm staying away. I would maybe lean Portland if this got to any higher, like plus 130 to 140, 150 range, which it might, because I think if you do like OKC, bet it now. I think it's going to keep just trickling up. But I'm passing. And I will say game one opened plus 4.5. That was too high, especially when Oklahoma City's the favorite to win the series. Then and they're only getting 3 out of 7 games at home. How are they plus 4.5 on the road and get one? Anyway, that's already down to 3. In some places, it's pushing 2.5. So that's kind of already been adjusted for. And I think now it's probably closer to fair. But Oklahoma City, they're the team everyone loves. It kind of reminds me of the Spurs in the sense that everyone hates Denver. Everyone's buying Oklahoma City. I don't know. Do you think it would be? Let me ask you this. I know I kind of rambled a little there. Do you think it would be any different if Paul George misses the corner three, they lose to Houston? Granted, they would have a different opponent because I think they'd be dropping down. They'd be the 7th or 8th seed. But, I mean, do you think a perception would be any different? Is one shot really that significant?
It's scary. I was literally just going to ask you the same thing, but not the Paul George corner three. I was going to say, let's say the comeback, and then when Westbrook, when they hit the three, when they were down 4 with 30 seconds ago and he misses.
Right, he can miss that one too, and then the game's over.
Yeah. Right, and then it's like a 6-point win, right? Let's just say it's not even a buzzer beat, right? So let's just say it's 6-point win, but I was even thinking like, well, and let's assume they're still also the sixth seed. I think Portland's favored. Like, I really do. Like, I thought Portland would be minus like $1.40.
Yeah.
And look, if Damian Lillard, I'll ask you another hypothetical. Let's say he just played for the Knicks. Like, SportsCenter would have him on every other show. Like, we would be doing highlights and talk about Lillard all the time. Right? Like, let's call it what it is, right? Like, the guy's awesome.
I'm going to look up his stats right now. Because I think you're right to the extent, because I, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you how many points he averaged this season. You might know.
No, I don't. But if you talk about, okay, there's talent, and then there's, like, MVP. Like, he is more valuable to his team than, like, obviously, like, any of the Warriors guys are because, they're so loaded and deep, right? He is Portland, right? He carries them. But, and I remember when I was in Buenos Aires and texting you because I found a game on Deportes and I lost and I owe you a dinner because it was the Portland Golden State game right before the All-Star break. But, like, he can be the best player. You only need to do that 4 games in a 7-game series, right? You don't need to be better all 7 games. Like, he could be the best player in a series on 4 games. He's that good. He has his sick range. And the team loves him. I think it was a Zach Lowe podcast or someone many years ago when it was the first year we were writing off Portland, right? I think it was the year maybe Aldridge left, right? And then they went to the playoffs. Everyone's like, where the hell? How the hell did they go? And I guess, yeah. I think Zach Lowe referenced a lunch he got. I think Barton was on that Portland team and he got lunch with Barton. I think this is the story. So I could be butchering some. He just looked at him. He's like, man, you don't know Dame. And like Lillard's just like their glue, point guard, floor leader, all that. They're well coached and they have a great home court advantage. So yes, the Nurkic injury stinks, but you have McCollum and they're so much deeper. Like you touched on it. They don't have to rely on Evan Turner as much. Guys like Jake Lehman are playing a lot and effective. Guys like Seth Curry, even Aminu. Like, all these guys are hitting big shots. Now, to be fair, there's a little bit of a scheduling advantage they get just because of where they're located throughout the course of the playoffs, and they have a little bit of an inflated home record. Maybe we saw that last year why they got swept, right? But I just think they're much more potent than they've been getting credit for the last couple years, and I think this OKC team is so shaky. Specifically because I think Westbrook is shaky, and while I love watching him play, and he's like one of the last guys I would want to guard in the NBA, there's just some erratic play that drives me crazy as someone who cares about the game and wants to see him do well because he plays so hard.
How much money would it require for us to pay you to stream a one-on-one game between Doug Kazarian and Russell Westbrook to 11?
Well, would I have to try on? I mean, like, what's why would I?
You got to try. I mean, maybe we'll have a side bet where you see if you can score or get a stop, something like that. But yeah, like would you do that? We should try to make it happen.
I have to try to take a charge every possession.
That's like, kind of disrespectful to your points, though, about attacking Portland. I wanted to end into you, but I wanted to say Portland, they surpassed their season win total, I think, back-to-back years now by 10 and 11 games. So just what they've done versus where we all expected it based on personnel where, you know, the season win total closes. Back-to-back years, so I think it was 11 games last year and now 10 this season. That's ridiculous. And so it thinks they have the injury to Nurkic and stuff. But, yeah, they've absolutely been a team. And they're one win away from being the 2 seed in the West, just behind the Warriors, who may be one of the best teams ever. And it's ridiculous how good they've been. I don't really fathom that either, because I don't, is Dame Lillard really that good? Maybe he is that underrated. Maybe if he was on the Knicks, he'd be a top 10 guy in the NBA. It's definitely possible.
Well, I think it's one of those cases, and you know, we've lost a little bit of that, but like, I think there's an intangible there where he makes players around him better, and I think there's a component to that. Now, when everybody raises their game in the postseason and the best, you know, maybe that becomes a leveler playing field, but there's something to be said. I kind of talk about the Spurs, how they're just so much more effective throughout the drudges of a regular season where you know you're going to get their professional effort. There, you know, very few times will the Spurs lay an egg. Very few times, right? But then they always bounce back. Pop will go on a tirade. And it's just they're much more dependable in that regard, whereas the postseason comes, everyone's trying, and then, well, gee, the Spurs aren't that good. So maybe it's a little bit of that, but I also think they're like that's a very potent backcourt, especially I love Dame. So that would be my apprehension. But OKC's best is better than Portland's best, with that being said. Now, can the Thunder deliver is the question, right? Especially with the Paul George shoulder injury. But the Thunder ceiling with that length, if Ferguson and all those other guys, Grant and all those dudes who have just such length and athleticism play to their potential, I mean, they have two guys who are like capable of being MVPs, right? And they're loaded.
One little thing, and then we can move on to the best series of the first round. But I think there was a stretch during this season. It was right before the All-Star break. Maybe it kind of overlapped. But there was a stretch where Terrence Ferguson hit something in like 45% from three for a month. And like just something as simple as that, having a guy where teams had to, well, for one, respect it when you have guys like Westbrook and Paul George there. But when he's actually making them, it's like the problem they've had where Andre Roberson can never knock down threes, but they right. needed his defense. Ferguson's a pretty good defender. He's a plus defender overall. But if he's knocking down threes, and it happened, was there a Mavs series? It was right before Portland actually signed Aminu to a new deal. And there was a Mavs series where Aminu randomly hit like 5 out of 7 threes. The next game he was 4 of 6. The next game he was 3 for 3. If you just have a guy that randomly, you know, exceeds expectation from three by 9 points, per game, something like that, something as little as Terrence Ferguson hitting 3 or 4 threes could swing OKC from being really, really elite to them struggling to get by Portland. Like something as little as that. That's why it's still kind of this high variance gambling thing that we do. Granted, it's 7-game series, but guys have good series. Or like you were saying, can Lillard be the best player on the floor for 4 out of 7 games in a series? Certainly it's possible. So it's very interesting to watch. But yeah, Terrence Ferguson, if he's hitting down threes, I'm glad you brought up his name. He had this kind of underrated month during the season where OKC was at their best. So he's just kind of an X factor that's worth watching.
And the nice thing I like about him, he's not just a one-off, like, good defender, right? They're all have that frame. Now, Adams has a different frame. But when you have Grant, Ferguson,
Nerlens Noel,
George, Noel, even, like, yeah. Westbrook's length, like, they're all these, and Schroeder even, not that he's that good of a defender, but, like, all these dudes have, that court all of a sudden gets really small, and then Adams is a beast, and it's like, okay. This team, now I know why people thought they were the biggest threat to the Warriors, because they can really be a problem defensively.
So. Yep, definitely.
All right, man, let's talk about that. Let's wrap things up with that, what you just dubbed a moment ago, the best first-round series. And that's Utah and Houston. This number came in a little high. I said Rockets 275. It's out minus $4. I guess it makes sense, but it's what are your metrics say? Let's start there. What do your metrics say?
I'll say my metrics are very disappointed that these two teams are playing each other. I most certainly would have been backing Houston and Utah against other teams. So So the way Portland, you know, messed that up, playing five players all game last night, down 100, came back and beat the Kings. I'm a little upset about that. But so Houston, to put this into perspective, they have the best net rating in the NBA since the All-Star break. They've been playing fantastic. They're healthy. It's going to be for them, you know, can they do it in the playoffs? And I actually took plus 1250 a couple of days ago on them to win it all. It was a small bet, but I think there is some value there. They're probably winning it all, something more like the plus 8.5 to 900 range. So I thought that was an edge worth betting, and it kind of gives me something to root for. I'm tired of, you know, we're all kind of tired of Golden State winning. So right. I did grab the Rockets, but Utah on the other side, who had the second best net rating since the All-Star break? The Jazz did. They also had the second best record in the NBA over that time frame. They almost won last night because Grayson Allen dropped 40. Now, don't expect that in the playoffs, but they were benching all their starters. They took the Clippers, went to overtime, and ended up losing. But they're a team that's just come on, and they did it last year, right? And they beat an OKC team pretty easily last year in the first round to an extent that everyone thought Paul George would just leave. He didn't. He didn't go to the Lakers. He stayed. He came back. It's another thing we didn't really mention with the OKC-Portland kind of revenge there for the Thunder and Paul George's return. But Utah's really, really strong. And in this actual matchup in the season, they haven't played since February 2nd, basically since Houston started rolling. But in the three games that Chris Paul didn't play, Houston plays a lot quicker when Chris Paul's off the court, the pace. So in those three games, their pace is around 100, which would be bottom three in the NBA. And Utah's defensive rating was 95.2, which is ridiculous. That would be by far the best in the history of the world. So Houston doesn't, you know, it's hard when Gobert and Favors are behind protecting the rim. It's hard when you have guys like Rubio and Mitchell who are good wing defenders in the pick and roll. And even Ingles, right, he can switch on to Harden and be an elite guy defensively. So they're a really good matchup for Houston. So this, as a series, watching as a fan, absolutely, I think it's the best one. I already bet under 219, which has moved while it was right before we started the podcast. It's down to 217.5, 217, but it was way too high. It should probably be more like 214.5. So I still think there's an edge there at 217.5 if you can grab that by the time this airs. But I'm staying away from the series price. I think Utah will end up losing in 6 or 7. That's the more often scenario or most likely scenario. But I really think there's going to be some value betting unders early in the series before these are maybe 211, 212 by game 4 or 5, because totals tend to go down lower as the series progress too, and they start playing slower and they're more accustomed to each other's offenses and whatnot. So that's my angle for this, but probably sitting back watching as a fan, just disappointed we couldn't bet on Utah against someone else, because this team's really, really strong. They have the best net rating in the West outside of the Warriors on the season. There's just some things like, oh, but they're the five seed. Yeah, they started really, really slow. They were also, I think, the first or second unluckiest team based on, you know, some late game stuff that's pretty coin flippy that people track with some luck metrics. So don't sleep on the Jazz, but obviously the Rockets are better and they probably are going to be moving on.
So going back to that Thunder game, we talked about how the Rockets blew that 21-point lead. And did you watch all of it? Do you know how they blew it, really?
I watched the second half, yeah.
Okay. So it was like two things. Like Harden missed some key plays that didn't get the whistle. And then the other was like, basically, the Thunder said, all right, you guys are going to have to beat us and just let dudes like Gerald Green and Marquise Chris hit shoot threes and see what happens.
I think P.J. Tucker had a few he just claimed, yeah.
So I think that's what's going this series is going to come down to. I mean, that's, expert analysis here. If the role players can hit threes, Utah has no chance. But if those guys, I mean, like Gerald Green has like, you know, kind of like Redick and, Bellinelli coming off screens. And this like hyper speed, screeching salt, like pivot torque on your knees and like fading away threes. Like Gerald Green's in that category too of hitting them. Like, I don't know how they do it, but they do, all those guys. And if those guys, if that goes in, well, it's unstoppable. And obviously, if
it's
Utah
funny,
guys,
you can kind of say that about every series. Yeah.
Right. But that's Houston's MO, right? And they're not going to get to play the Knicks and Suns in the postseason like they have in the last week or so, but they're setting franchise record in three-pointers attempted. Mm-hmm. It's just bonkers. Like, what can you do? And then with Harden being at his elite level, I will say this. I don't have the graphic in front of me, but I just read it earlier prepping for the show, is that anyone who's had a usage rate this high has never got out of the first round in the NBA.
Oh, wow, that's a cool one. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, so it's like D-Wade and some of those Heat teams, and then some teams that didn't even make the playoffs.
I wonder how high his usage rate was when Chris Paul played the games that he was on the court at the same time. I mean, that probably brings it down quite a bit.
That's a good point.
That's why they got Chris Paul, I think, to kind of take at least 40% of the burden or something. But that's still, yeah, we've seen Harden die off anyways in playoffs where he just gets too tired. He'll go 2-for-11 from three every game.
That's what's so fascinating. And then on top of that, I want to ask you this, because they blew that game, blah, blah, blah. If they advance, they're going to play the Warriors. I've heard people say it's better that they face the Warriors in the second round than the third round, because they'll be fresher and healthier, whereas obviously Chris Paul injury hampered him last year.
Yep, I tweeted that, I think, last night. Oh, okay. I said there's a plus here. So I'm 100% behind that. There's a plus in the sense that there's less games Chris Paul can get hurt before they play Golden State, and less games that Harden can get worn down before they play Golden State. Now, Utah, it doesn't do him much of a benefit in that regard, because I think Utah is going to get a game or two, at least a game. So they're going to make them work anyways. Just even if the Rockets are pulling wins out, Utah is going to make them grind. So, yeah, definitely, I think for the plus 1250, and you can still get 1150, I think, out there, last I looked yesterday. And there's plenty of, like, 10-to-1s, plus 500 range for the West, if you'd rather go that route. That's going to be definitely an option. But it's interesting, then, you look at if they were to somehow be – and you mentioned just how many threes they're shooting. They already were setting records and kind of changing the game the last few seasons. Daryl Morey, they've been analytics-driven for so long, and they're going even beyond that. They're shooting so many three-pointers. They've let Harden shoot so many step-back threes, and he just goes to the basket if he doesn't shoot a step-back three. That's we talked about it with Auburn and Wofford as potential teams that just shoot a lot of threes in the tournament that can make a deep run. And you like that. You want to embrace that three-point variance, and the Rockets are absolutely a team that – they would have beaten without Chris Paul the Warriors last year if they didn't miss 27 straight threes and set some ridiculous record anomaly that'll never happen again. And so people will realize – and now, granted, I don't think the Rockets are quite as good. They lost Ariza. I think that's – there's some drop-offs to guys like Austin Rivers getting more minutes and this and that. But overall – and Harden's been better, so who knows – I think, yeah, that three-point variance you're talking about, they absolutely could crush teams if they're hitting their threes. Doesn't matter if it's the Warriors or the Jazz or if the Eastern Conference winner. It's going to be very interesting to follow. If they're missing 27 straight threes, it's going to be hard to beat anybody.
Right. Good point. All right, man. Well, good catching up. Always good breaking it down. I know our listeners like it a lot. We'll catch you on the airwaves, the tube as well, for Daily Wager. Happy postseason to you.
Likewise. Thanks, guys.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
So that's going to do it for this Behind the Bets podcast. We had two this week, obviously, with Jeff Sherman earlier in the week, talking about the Masters, previewing that is underway. And then here we just previewed the NBA playoffs, which get going Saturday. I just love that opening weekend, all game ones, four on Saturday, four on Sunday, before we get rolling throughout the week. So it is an exciting time of year. I know I complained a little bit about the regular season being over, but you get the spirit of it. I just want more games. But obviously the quality of play, the opportunities are out there as well. So it's an exciting postseason. Send in your pedicures if you want a T-shirt. At Doug ESPN is the Twitter handle. And go check out the TV show Daily Wager as well. I hope Dop does at some point.
6 p.m. on an ESPN channel everywhere.
Yes, there it is. All right, thanks everyone for listening. Enjoy the postseason, and we'll catch you back here next week.